This podcast is intended for mature audiences.
It also contains two British people talking about sex.
Hey, so Chris.
Uh-huh.
I hear you like them big.
Yeah, I do.
Well, we've got the show for you today.
Hey!
Hello!
Hello!
And welcome to Teabags and Joysticks, the kinky video game podcast.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Si. How are you, Chris?
Yeah, I'm good. It's the weekend. The sun's out. Getting warm. It's all good.
It's getting warm just before MRM, which is making me a little bit concerned about being in rubber.
I have got something special for you.
Oh, boy. Right. Oh, boy. That's slightly concerning, but okay. For those that aren't aware, Si, why am I talking about myself in third person?
I don't know.
I'm very much a bear, and with that comes being rather hirsute, which hirsute and in rubber in warm weather is a recipe for dehydration, so we say.
There's a special thing you can wear to combat that a little bit.
Fair enough. So we are going to only do the one tea today because our bag is an extended bag today, which will be, Chris?
Which will be with Quincy, who is Handler EU for 2022.
Indeed, Handler EU 22. I don't know, I like saying it like that. It rolls off the tongue a little easier.
Yeah, that's like 2022 is definitely roll. That's way too long.
But yeah, no, we had a really good chat with them about what the handler title means, what it is to be a handler, a little bit of the kink at Pride debate, shall we say.
Wait, you mean we have already done the interview rather than it's coming up?
Yeah, sometimes we just have to record a few things out of order just because of the way that time works.
Oh.
Really? But before we get into the dimensions in space side of that, shall we talk about what's the tea, Chris?
Yes. So I don't know if you've seen on the news recently that someone, a YouTuber, has put a massive "Welcome to Luton" sign on the way
into
Gatwick Airport.
I saw this and I thought this was beautiful trolling.
Yeah, I know.
Absolutely. Absolutely don't do this, kids, because it will absolutely like cause problems for people and freak people out. I know if I saw that, I would be having a major meltdown.
but
there's that little bit of me that goes, that's brilliant.
Yeah. At the same time, he was perfectly entitled to do that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, has technically done nothing wrong.
Exactly. That's just words on the ground. But
it's,
anyway.
It's masterful trolling.
Yeah, but anyway, someone has made a mod for Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Oh, I'm sorry, I peeked there. I apologize to headphone users, but that's brilliant.
To put the "Welcome to Luton" sign into the game for Gatwick Airport.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, I'm sorry, that's done me. Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, I need that mod. Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I love it. Oh, that's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. I love it. I don't know who did that, but I love you. Like... This is really one of those stories that just keeps on giving.
Oh, yes.
It's like the initial idea, like the planning that will have gone into it, it is just kind of ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that it literally doesn't break the law in any way, but it trolls people so hard.
Yep.
I kind of hate the human like confusion cost of it, but at the same time, it's just that there's that little bit of me that has to go, you know what, fair play.
Yeah, you're only really going to be confused for like 30 seconds, and then you talk
exactly.
About, yeah, this is Gatwick, yeah.
Oh, that's fucking great. That's absolutely great. I love it. Oh, that's made my day, that has. I need that mod. The only way this gets better if this starts becoming like an optional toggle in similar games.
Oh god.
Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, thank you. You've made my day with that. You really have made my day with that. But so yeah, just to reiterate, like, I'm skipping over tea this week in the interest of giving our guests more space. Mm-hmm. So we shall head straight into the bag where we are, as you said, talking with Quincy, and we're talking to them about what Handler EU is, what the title means, etc.
Indeed.
Let's go.
And with us this week, we have got Handler EU Quincy. Welcome, Quincy, to the show.
Welcome. Thank you. Oh, God, I'm dying.
That's exactly what you need for a podcast. This.
Yeah. We start this conversation off, it's like, oh, if you need a clap at any time, just clap and we'll restart this. And then I'm like, first go in. thank you for having me. You're my first podcast since I got my title in May. So thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, and congratulations on your title.
Indeed.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
So do you want to just quickly introduce yourself and what, like, introduce yourself first, obviously, but then also what is Handler EU for those that aren't familiar?
Yes, so I'm Quincy, my pronouns are they, them. I am a non-binary Kingston fetishist, mainly mass presenting, but who cares about that? I also went for European Handler this year in May at Darklands, and I was graciously given the title after a lot of competing, which I think we'll talk about later. Mm-hmm. European Handler is a title that encompasses all of Europe, and for those Brexiteers, that does include the Britain, so England, Wales, Scotland and Ireland, before you ask. And what I do is that I try to raise awareness around our pup scene, but also around the handlers' titles more. And I would like to get that into a bit more detail later, mm-hmm. but broadly that's what I do, and try to help educate, support as many people in our community, kink and fetish community, but also more specifically pups and handlers.
Awesome.
That sounds amazing.
So we've done a few shows where we've talked about puppies. We recently did a show with Pup Tracking and Pup Titan, talking about the puppy side of things. And one thing that we were talking about within that show is kind of, it's very easy to define a puppy within a pup play situation. If you were to, and I guess this kind of comes through doing the Handler EU side of things as well, but sort of, how would you define a handler in that relationship? Like, what would you say the role of a handler is?
Yeah, so I've struggled with this, I think, before and after the title. I don't really like calling myself a handler. It sounds a bit weird. Mm-hmm. personally, I still get called handler, and I'm fine with that. But the thing is, with a handler, for me, is someone who takes a caretaking role or some sort of dom role with someone who's a pup or pet, mm-hmm. so all the different types of pet mm-hmm. plays, mm-hmm. And takes that caretaking role. So I've started to use the term handler plus,
okay,
to show the big umbrella of handlers, because a lot of people won't use the handler term, but would come under a definition of a handler,
okay,
someone who supports or caretakes or is dominant over puppies. So you've got doms, you've got sirs, you've got daddies, you've got thaddies, you've got mummies, you've got mistresses, you've got dominatrices, you've got dommies, you've got doms. They all would fit under this definition of handler, mm-hmm. even alpha sometimes, but they won't call themselves a handler because that's not a title that they prefer to use.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So I think when we think of handler, it's anyone that takes a caretaking role or more of a dominant role with someone who's in a pup or pet play headspace.
Right.
Or is a pup or pet.
Okay. So one thing that I want to briefly touch on, because people may have come across different titles in our scene. So, for example, Mr. Leather, Mrs. Leather, Miss Rubber, so on and so forth. Handle EU doesn't have a gender title this year, correct?
No, so this is the first year both a European puppy and European handler has removed the prefix.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no Mr., Miss, or Mux. It is just blank, so it allows anyone of any gender to go for it. This is not a new thing. There have been some pup titles across Europe that have done this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The UK has done an adjustable one.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of Velcro, so they could do Mr., Miss, Mux, or just leave it blank.
Okay.
Puppy Belgium this year has reinstated their one for a long time. It all might be the first one, actually. And it is Puppy Belgium. Mm-hmm. There is no prefix to that. And I think a few more titles across Europe have removed the prefix to allow anyone of our community to go for the title, no matter their gender.
And that's a really nice thing.
Yeah. I mean, it works for some titles. I mean, it doesn't work if you're Leather UK. And this is a bit odd. It's leather. Because yeah. Leather is not a... Not, you know... It's not an identity you call someone, whereas handler, you know, it is clearly a person, and a puppy is a persona, whereas leather is something you wear, or rubber is something you wear, and is not associated with a person. You know, so I don't know what can be done there. I'm sure there is something.
Yeah, I still find European handler a bit weird. Pretty sick. It's a bit like, I'm a European handler. What does that mean? But I'm sure there's titles all across that are starting to open up and trying to think about changing of the name. And I think we will see more titles do this, mm-hmm. or there'll be more titles where there'll be different ones. So
yeah.
There is a Mux title in Europe, I believe. Mm-hmm. So there are titles for people who are non-binary, and there are missed titles as
well. Absolutely.
So there might be a broadening up of titles, or it might be that they drop the prefix to try and encompass everyone.
I think that's going to come down to the board of each individual title, isn't it? Because it's a separate, like, it's not like there is one board that decides all of them, which is potentially a misconception with the whole kind of, I guess, pageantry of kink, if we want to kind of use that kind of term to describe, like, the titles. Like, it is, each one has its individual board, which I guess at that point, should we segue into kind of, what was your journey with that? Like, where did you start with looking at, I guess, running for the handler title, I guess?
Yeah, so I've worked with mainly Puppy UK in the past, and a lot of the Puppy UK team are also run Puppy Europe. There's some connection there. And there are some also Puppy Germany on the Puppy EU team. So I've worked with them in the past, and I know some of them quite well. So I had that connection. And I've also thought maybe running for Puppy UK at some point. Not really sure, not really confident.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I was also like, I've fallen out of being a puppy a little. Last year, mm-hmm. In the last few years, but I still engage with a lot with puppies. I still have a few people who came to me new to the scene, and they wanted to get involved in pup play, and they'd wear my hood and we'd do some pup play. And I had a lot of people who were also in the scene who knew me from when I was a pup, wanted to come over and obviously play and everything. And I was like, oh, I'm not really feeling being a pup, mm-hmm. but I'll happily play with you.
Yeah.
So I've sort of fallen out of that being a pup myself. Mm-hmm. I also do other pet plays. I'm also known for being a bunny, which also didn't have a title, so it's like, oh well, I can't play for Bunny UK. And then I got a message saying, oh, we're doing a handler title. Mm-hmm. I know you thought about going for the title for Puppy UK, and I know that you've had a bit of issues with being a pup, but I know that you still engage with pups and you sort of take on this persona of education, support and everything, and I think you would be very good for going for Handler Europe. Would you think about going to it? Drunk on my birthday, I said yes.
So all the best decisions made.
all the best decisions. Absolutely. I shouldn't admit this, but hey, I was quite drunk and I went, well, fuck it, if I'm allowed to swear on this. and went, why not? Why don't I go for it? What's going to... I won't get it. And it would just be a lot of fun to go to Darklands and perform on stage. Mm. Why not? So I just applied and went for it. And now I'm here on a podcast and travelling Europe. So
I'm glad to have you. We are. So you mentioned that you got a message to invite you. Is it generally a case of you get invited to challenge for a title, or is it like open application, or like basically can anyone go for a title, or is it like you have to be recognized at a certain point first?
Yes, so we have so I didn't really get invited as such officially. Mm-hmm. I just got one of my friends was on the team and said, oh, maybe this interests you. So I didn't get invited officially. So if you are Handler UK, you do get an official invite, but it is open to everyone. So at the moment, we don't have any recognised Handler titles as I know of in Europe. So the applications are totally open, and also you won't be contesting against anyone who has got a European title, because there are no European titles.
Fair enough.
Apart from, I think, potentially UK. So go for it. You're not going to be disadvantaged if you haven't got a sash already. You're not going to be disadvantaged if you haven't done much, if you don't think you've done much work already, or even if you don't think you're much of a handler, or you're not sure where you sit in the handler world, but you think you can give back to the community. Still go for it. Have a go. It's a great time. You build a family and you build a great connection with all the different contestants. You meet people all over Europe and you do get invited all across Europe, even if you don't.
Fair enough.
So you can get invited to travel all across the world and get free accommodation sometimes. Awesome. Fantastic. So have a go. It's a lot of fun.
Okie doke. So in terms of, I guess, running for the title, does it function akin to other titles where you run on a platform, you run on a pledge, if you will, of sort of what you will do with the title, what's your, I guess, aims? And if so, kind of what was yours?
Yes, so it's a bit like that. So I don't think, a lot of us say what we are passionate about. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's not aims, but it's like, I'm passionate about this, but I already do this and I want to push this to its greater extent. Yep. So sometimes it's not aims, definitely. And I think also people don't need to always go in with aims, but have that passion, that drive for something. Mm-hmm. So yes, it has got similarity. For me, there was quite a few things. So I do some charity work outside of my day job, doing sexual health and consent. Mm-hmm. And that was a big part of it for me. Another part was with that charity, I also work at Kink with Pride, Kink Fetish Pride. And then another thing was talking about my personal experience and why I'm doing this.
Okay.
So I wanted to try and make the title and try and break down the stigma of talking and and building a family.
Mm.
So I talked about my past where I moved away from home in a small town in the UK and then moved to the worst place in the UK.
Okay.
And we could all probably guess that place. It begins with an S and ends in a H. the worst place you could live. And there was no queer scene, there was nothing, there was no queer people. You go on to Grindr, it's all blank profiles. And I had a few family issues during that time, and I sort of got into quite a bad headspace where I would be abusive with sex, so I would become addicted to sex, or I'd be addicted to alcohol. So it literally be every night I'd either get sex or I'd get alcohol, and then got to the point where I'd have sex and then alcohol, just to sleep at the end of the day. And I was saying how that was risky behaviour and how, for me, I don't want anyone else to go through what I did for over 6 months. And that's why I'm doing this title, is so one, people can see us and people can find our community and then find family and find people. Mm-hmm. So that's the pride stuff. And then the safety and consent is that learning about your behaviors and learning about the risks. I'm rarely, rarely going to tell you no unless it's really, really risky or really, really wrong. Yep. But learning the risks of what you're doing and what risks you're taking, mm-hmm. and then becoming better educated so you know what you're doing and you know the risks you're taking, because I didn't at that time. I had no education. We all know the school systems are poorly educating children, especially LGBTQ plus children. Mm-hmm. So I had poor education. So I just did it because I knew no better.
Okay.
So that's what I was going for, is that I've experienced this and this is how I want to resolve this, and this is how I want people not to go down the same path as me, because I don't want anyone to go down that same path or any similar path that I experienced.
Yep. Okay. I think that's quite a common thing in the kink community. When you do get people that are putting themselves out there, a lot of the time it is that I want people to have what I didn't. And I know that's one of the reasons we do this podcast as well. It's just like there's always that thing. It's like people like yourself that go out for the titles, people that sort of run community events, people that sort of run sort of like we do here, the podcast, etc. Yeah. The common thing whenever I talk to any of them is just like, I wanted to put something back in. I wanted to put something in that I didn't have. I love that. I always love that about the community.
Yeah, because I started to find a family and started to find that connection, that chosen family. Mm-hmm. And then I ran for the title going, oh yeah, I found my family, like the whole kink community is my family. And then we got invited for dinner with some of the team and some of the other contestants. Sure. And I literally welled up at the end because I was like, I really have found a family, because the amount of connections that you build at these events. Yeah. And the connection, I rarely did anything sexual at Darklands, surprisingly enough. And I just did social, and I thought, oh, I wouldn't enjoy it because I'm not going playing in the dark room or whatever. But it actually allowed me to connect with people, and I really did make a family. And I've still talked to a lot of the people. Mm-hmm. I was speaking to people from Austria today. Someone from Spain yesterday.
Wow.
And we're just building these great friendships, and we're like, oh well, when you come over to mine, I've got a whole Zelda collection.
Oh nice.
And I was like, oh, I'll come over. And it was just all these sorts of things and spaces that you wouldn't have ever seen, and these connections that I would never ever made if I hadn't have put myself out of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And I think every day the community surprises me, and I sort of want to give back because they've helped me so much and progressed me as a person.
Yeah.
That's great.
That I don't know why more people don't generally, when we talk about wider community, give back, because you give back and then other people see that and other people become better, they become a better person, then they give back, and then it's this forever chain of I think that's also something with the title, is that people always like, what's your legacy you're going to leave? What are you going to leave after you give the sash back? And I'm still like, oh, I want to make sure that I do this whole campaign. But a part of me is like, if I can change one or two or three people and they become that sort of passionate person because they've found their community, they've found something beneficial and now they want to give back, then they're going to influence three people themselves, and then it's going to be nine people. Mm. Then it's going to be more and more and more. And I think that's the legacy, and I think that's the legacy any title holder should aspire to, is changing one or two or three people that are going to progress long before I'm here. I think I've got a few years left in me. I'm only young, but we'll have to see. But I think that's the legacy any title holder should leave.
But I think that's really apt, like, especially during Pride Month, and like, we'll probably end up getting onto the Kinkut Pride in a moment, but I think, like, yeah, if you look at the fact, like, that we're recording this in Pride Month, and you know, you're absolutely right. The fact that you can have that knock on with 2-3 people, and they go on and do 2-3 people, like, there's this phrase that we used to use when I was at university for research, like, standing on the shoulders of giants, like, we do that in our community as well. Like, people like help build us up and we do it in return and so on. And yeah, you really do create a village.
You got to think of all those people that started off the movement,
yeah,
and how much idolised them.
Yeah.
And that they didn't think they were doing anything. Half the time, I bet you that they were like, oh, we just want to cause change.
Mm-hmm.
We just want to do something different. We want to make everyone's life better. And they didn't think that 56 years down the line we'll be posting photos of them all over Twitter. We didn't think that they would be, there's probably 15 billion pages about Martha B. Johnson, mm-hmm, and Sylvia Riviera and everyone like, yeah, that. And was it Martha Howard? There's so many of these people that we idolise now that probably at the time were just like, oh, I just wanted to do a walk down the street and commemorate our the protest last year, or I had enough and I wanted to make change for our community at that point in time. I never thought that 60 years down the line they'd be idolised.
No.
Because they didn't want that.
Yeah, no one knew what they were doing at the time they were doing anything. Like, there was no way for them to foresee what kind of feedback it would lead to. That's, you know, so big or small things, you're going to provide, you know, kind of creates that kind of positive feedback, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Look at Thomas Finlan, mm, as well. He was just drawing what he found was erotic.
Yeah.
And he just kept drawing and everyone enjoyed it. And then I think near the end of his life, he was invited to IML.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he pretty much nearly cried on stage because he didn't realise how much of a community he'd grown just from drawing what he drew. Mm-hmm. And if you think about now, even in Finland, they still use his artwork for safe sex.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's just like, he at the time, he didn't really... just doing what he enjoyed doing and just wanted to share it with people later on.
Yeah.
And now he's an icon of our community.
Yeah. I also like how Tom of Finland is actually a cultural icon in Finland itself.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of like titles, you kind of win one and then you kind of progress to like a next level of title. So you kind of win a regional title and then, you know, that entitles you to go for an international title or something like that. Is that a case in the handler titles? And is that kind of system common? Because that's what I've kind of known, basically.
Yeah, so you technically never win. You never win a title.
Okay.
I have to say this, you don't win a title, you earn a title.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Through your work and through your going through the contest, you earn the title.
Cool.
For the handlers, there is some new developments going on. So traditionally, there's been a lot in America. So you have the IPTC, which is the International Puppy and Trainer Contest in America. And you do get some handler titles in America and then they go to IPTC.
Yeah.
There was also recently the handler title started, I think, about 3 years ago in Australia. And
okay.
David, who's current who was handler last year for Australia, got IPTC recently, so it's been in 2021. God, the years are messed up with COVID. Anyway, he got the title at some point and then he's gone on to IPTC. And they judged my contest. Yeah. Lovely. I'm hoping to meet them soon as well. But obviously Australia's a bit funny. In Europe, there's some developments going on.
Yeah.
something that I'm also trying to help with as well is trying to get some handler titles in regions. Mm-hmm. So we've got the UK, we've got Spain, Austria, Germany, all these sort of different places, the Czech Republic. Mm-hmm. We've got all these countries that have a puppy one but don't have a handler mm-hmm. one, so it'd be nice to get those countries into European. So then you go to European. Once you get European, you then go to IPTC. I have thought about it, and when I was on stage and was given the sash, David did announce before I got it, you are welcome to contest at IPTC whenever you wish to, and we hope to see you soon. IPTC is quite a big jump, even from Europe.
I can imagine.
Because you now represent the world. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be maybe a few years after I've done my handler one till I go for IPTC. It's a lot of money as well. You've got to go to America because that's normally where it is. But they might move it. If it ever goes to Europe, I might go.
lots of international title conventions seem to be in the US. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, definitely. But I am potentially going next year to support some puppies that are going for International Puppy. But also, if you're a recognised title holder, you can also go for IML. So you can go for International Miss 11. So I could contest for IML as a title holder.
Okay.
However, I could not contest for IML because I am non-binary, mm-hmm. it might mean that I would not be able to contest because I am not male.
Right.
This is obviously something that hasn't been talked about yet because no way am I going for IML at any point in time yet. It is something that I'd be interested to do in the long, long future, but at the current rate, I wouldn't feel comfortable going for it, and I'm not sure if I would be officially allowed to go for it. But that's sort of the transition through the titles.
Yeah. It's a shame that with the IML title that they don't recognise, or at least I'm saying they don't recognise based on what you said, that they don't recognise non-binary, etc. Like, that is something that I think more of the, I guess, the gender titles need to actually take a step back and take some time to properly reflect on.
Yeah, I think for me, I think IML is taking quite big leaps in the leather scene. Mm-hmm. I think if we all saw recently, they had a talk talking about trans, being trans. If you met a trans guy, what would you mm-hmm. do? And I obviously wasn't there, but I got told it's quite good, apart from the what happened, transphobia that happened in the talk. However, the talk was very good. They've had trans title holders in the past for IML. Mm-hmm. They've also, this year, the International Boot Black. Alistair is actually from UK, and they are a trans man. So I think IML is going a lot further than quite a lot of titles. They're very willing to talk about trans issues. Are we at the point where non-binary is including the title? Not yet. Do I think it could happen in the future? Yes.
Okay.
Do I think that other titles may not get there as quickly as IML? Yes. Mm-hmm. But I think when a title that big starts talking about it, it manifests.
Yeah.
I know you talked about how there isn't one big board for all the titles. There isn't, but a lot of them talk to each other.
Oh yeah, I'm not. I wasn't saying there's no communication across. Yeah. Just more like it's not a set panel type of thing.
No, it's not a set panel, and I think, but I do think they do look at what other titles do, and I think once one title makes a big change, a lot of them go, "Shit, should we do that?" Oh, actually, the one that people go to after us has done this, or one that's adjacent to us has done this. Oh. What should we be doing? Should we be doing something like this? And it starts the conversation. So I do hope in the future IML does start this conversation, and I think they will. I'm just waiting for the day that it does, and I'll be very ecstatic and very happy, and I will be sending my congratulations to IML, hopefully. And I don't think it'll be long.
I think it's always that thing, isn't it? It's just like people are always hesitant to... I don't necessarily like this phrase, but like people are always hesitant to put their head above the parapet and be that first one to make the move, make the change, etc. But once people see like one or even two do make that move, it very quickly seems to follow that more and more do. And I think it almost becomes exponential.
Yeah, and I think once we get more diverse title holders, that change will also happen. Because some organizations work like this,
yep.
where once you finish your title, you're offered to help the team.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, if the team is mainly made up of cis white men, all the team are going to see is mainly cis white men, potentially. There are exceptions to that.
Sure.
But when you have a diverse team, you get diverse thought and you get diverse opinions. Yep. So maybe as there's more title holders, they go into the organisation team and then you get more diversity that way. Mm-hmm. Or you just get people like me at the moment who are just like, I'm not ashamed to say I'm non-binary. I'm going to talk about being non-binary to my death. Mm-hmm. If you don't like it, you can go away. But I'm going to talk about it because there's more people like me that either want to go for titles or... just people in our community that are non-binary or trans and they're not sure if the community is right for them because maybe all they're seeing is men.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also females in our community that are never sure if they can go for titles or should be a part of our community. And I think there should be some more female representation. We've currently got our first trans and first female title holder in the UK for Puppy. And that's great representation for the female and trans community. So I think more come along, more diversity, more people go for it, and then more diversity. So I think it's going to be that exponential thing over the next few years. And I'm quite excited to see where it goes.
You and me both. So given that, I mean, we mentioned it before, like we are in Pride Month. And I think anyone who has seen... our Twitter and your Twitter, etc., will see that we have an opinion on this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Kink at Pride?
No, definitely not. No, I'm joking.
Disgusting.
You got the scare. Oh, it's disgusting. Why would people do that? No, I think it's totally should be there. It's something that I've been advocating since pretty much I got in the community. I turned up to... I didn't really start Prides till I was in the King of Fetch community, and that's how really I got part of the LGBTQ plus community. So I was like, I should represent the community that got me involved, because other people will get involved through that way. So I'm a total yes, yes, yes. But I know there's a lot of discourse about no, no, no.
There has been.
Quincy, think of the children.
Oh. I have a trigger word now, and I never realised it was a trigger word till someone said it a few days ago.
Oh?
Family friendly.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that just makes my skin crawl. It's like chalk on a... was it nails on a chalkboard? That's the one. So, this is where I get into a very difficult realm. So I totally agree that we should be diversify in our community. I really feel that also we should allow people to come and see our community. Like, there's people who are probably 14 exploring their, like, trying to understand their sexuality or gender, and we should be allowing these people, because they are part of our community, and we should be allowing people to open their minds, and by seeing it, they open their minds. So I'm not against, in certain scenarios, children coming to Pride to open their eyes. There's some amazing talks. They have speakers' corners at all sorts of prides. There's loads of discussions which are appropriate to all. However, then we do have our community where we do have to have discussions of a more mature or adult nature, where children shouldn't be allowed. And this is where we get into the discourse of, oh, you're wearing leather. And I'm like, I'm wearing leather, it doesn't mean I'm sexual. Nor does it mean that I am partaking in sex.
Yeah, exactly.
So walking in leather and being in rubber or whatever, I'm just expressing myself and I'm expressing how I want to be. And that's no different to anyone else wearing any other type of clothing. It's just because it's a certain fabric, you like to have a little bit of a fuss.
Yeah.
When we start having our discussions and talking about certain topics, yes, there should be a separation. Mm-hmm. And some people will moan at me about this, but there should be some separation because we do need to have conversations to make sure that people in our community are safe.
Yeah.
And we need to have open, honest discussions that we can't have that with children.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but that's the exact reason why, you know, we host, like, Folsom and stuff separately.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, MRM separately to Pride.
Yeah, definitely. But there are discussions at the moment of making King Confetti shares at Pride that are 18+. So people who maybe don't feel comfortable going to these big, massive prides that are dedicated to leather, but or fetish or kink, and they're not sure about what they want to do or get involved, they can come. They'll come to Pride. They might be intrigued, or they might have already seen something, and they want to learn more. And there should be that space for them because what are they going to do if they don't get the education there? Where are they going to get the education? Yes, there's podcasts, Maze podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
there's amazing Facebook groups, everything. But there's something about that connection in person, listening to conversation in person, asking those pertinent questions, or going up to someone quickly after a talk and going, so I just had a question, but I didn't feel comfortable talking about this at this time. But I just want to ask you this question.
And that's
the thing that I think we need to think about. And it's difficult. I think sometimes it can be a difficult thing about how do we have these adult conversations at a generic event.
Yeah, I think it is a difficult conversation. My come down on it has always been just like, we need to make the distinction between fetish, sex, and kink, because they are three very distinct, different things.
Mm-hmm. They can all happen at the same time, but they're different.
Exactly. When we say kink at Pride, we're not talking like having sex in the street. We're not talking about like having sex on the floats, etc. As long as you're like covered up where you should be by the law, what's the problem? My other side of this as well is, if you go along to a Pride, or you go along to a Pride parade, etc., and you're going with your family and whatever, know what you're going to. Realize that you are going to a movement that started as a liberation movement for the marginalized of society, and that included kinksters, that included homosexuals, that's like trans, so on and so forth. Like, that is what Pride is. And if you're coming along to that, you need to know that, and you need to make the judgment, is this where I want to take my family members, whatever the family members they may be? I never find any of these arguments to be in good faith when there's, oh, well, you know, family this, that, and family that, and what about the asexuals, everything else. It's like, if you talk to people, the ace community, etc., they can turn around and go, we're fine with this. You know?
But a lot of ace people are.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that's my point.
I could tell you many ace, I know many ace people mm-hmm. who are.
So do we.
On the ace spectrum that I've
exactly.
So do we.
It never makes sense to me, these arguments against it. It strikes me as like, why are you trying to sanitize yourself and be what you're not? The entire point of Pride is that we're not going to hide anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think you touched on two things. One was the history, mm-hmm. and like, it's so obvious. You look at any photos taken from 1969 all the mm-hmm. way up, and there's always been leather men predominantly. But there have been other parts of our community
yep.
there. You look at the AIDS crisis protests, the HIV protests
yep.
that were happening in the 80s. I can tell you, a lot of them were organised by leather
yep.
men.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the money raised were done by leather dykes and leather men during the AIDS crisis, especially in America, raising money so people actually could pay their hospital
mm-hmm.
bill.
Yeah.
And it's like, so you want to exclude that community that has been there and probably done more work, quotation mark, more work than other communities. You look at the mother of Pride. She had a pin that said, buy Switch Polly. I'm not greedy, I just know what I mm-hmm. want. She wore a leather waistcoat. She was a Switch. She was in our community. She was the mother of Pride. She helped organise the first ever proper march, which was in 1970, the Christopher Street Walk. Mm-hmm. And that was the first ever parade we ever had. Yep. And that was organised by someone who was
kinky. Exactly.
So, and then there's other things, but I think also Prides need to step up. Mm-hmm. And need to state what the dress code is and say swimwear coverage.
Yeah.
That's all you need
to
do.
Much, yeah.
And I can tell you that it's not us kinky and fetish people that are the ones that are pushing the dress code. And I think I do have a thing with, after the Pride Walk, we have that lovely picnic area, mm-hmm. we have that nice little village. I also still don't feel, I still feel that kids and people should be allowed. Our community is full of education, mm-hmm. especially around consent.
Yep. Yeah.
And I push that a lot. And I had some parents and children come up to our area. Our area is 18 plus, but I was out the front talking to people. And also we had a nice fun game about love cards, write a love letter to someone you mm-hmm. know. They might walk by and see it. And it was a lovely game, and a lot of people got involved in it. And the parent came up with their children. One was about 4, one was about mm-hmm. 8.
Okay.
And went, oh, could you just talk to our child about that poster over there? And it was the traffic light system.
Right.
And I went, okay, I'll try. And I went, so when you're playing with your toys and you're playing with a friend and you're playing dolls or whatever game you're playing and you're really enjoying it, you can say green. So you're saying you're really enjoying it, you're really happy about doing this, you're really engaged. If it gets a bit aggressive and they start throwing stuff or they start ramming the doll at you or they start being a bit aggressive while you're playing, but you still want to play, just say yellow. But if you're actually no longer comfortable, you're not happy, you don't want to play this game anymore, and you want to leave, you can say mm-hmm. red. And the mother turned around and went, oh, thank you very much. We really try to teach sexual health consent to our children because we know the schools don't. And that was a really mm-hmm. lovely explanation. Thank you. And we'll use that in the future to teach our kids.
Wow.
And they move along. And they went on their merry way and they were happy. And I was happy to give that education to a level which was right for those mm-hmm. ages. Yeah. And they didn't care that I was in full leather. They asked to talk about consent yep. to mm-hmm. their children. I was happy. I felt comfortable to do it at an age that was suitable for them. And we had a great session.
And the key thing is the parent was the one that engaged. The parent was the one that knew where they were, knew, brought the child across. I'm going to have this conversation.
Yeah, perfect.
And now the parent and the child are more educated. They go back home, and hopefully that education leads to a better person at the mm-hmm. end of the day. And they might share it with other parents, and they might share it again. And it's that whole sort of legacy thing we'll talk about later. So I think there is actually, we also need to think outside the box sometimes. I think we all go, oh, King at Pride, all we're going to do is message about being at Pride. And I think sometimes we've got to enjoy it and actually engage with the community. Mm-hmm. Once we do that and actually engage, people understand the benefit that's there. And that's why I've been asked to a lot of Prides, mm-hmm. because they've gone, oh, you're not just going to turn up, wave a leather flag or wave a pup flag and go across and go, oh, kink at pride, woo, kiki. They actually know that I'll go afterwards and I'll actually try to educate people, generally 18 plus, but I'm not scared to try and educate people of all ages and making it appropriate for all ages. I know one of the prides that I'm working with, that I have with my charity, we're actually helping the youth area with consent and sexual health information, because we know a lot of it.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of it. We're sharing that resource to the organisers of that area. They're checking it through. If they want to make any changes to make it more age appropriate, I said they're welcome to do so. And they're going to be sharing it in their area to really help drive sexual health and consent from a young age. Because once they get up into our age, they start becoming better people, and we won't need to do that education, hopefully, because they would have already been educated.
I think there's also a lot to be said of there is a lot of people, I think, argue about this in bad faith. And their thing is, oh, well, you should be thinking about everyone else, this, that, and the other. And don't get me wrong, absolutely, consent and who can be sort of involved with the scene and where a scene may be, etc., is one thing. There is an amount of personal autonomy that needs to be taken, though. You need to understand, like, what it is that Pride is, what it is that you are coming along to, what it is you are walking into. And understand that, with all due respect, and I know there are queer families out there, don't get me wrong, but with all due respect, if you are bringing people to Pride, you are responsible for dealing with that and having that sit down and go, is this what I want to be exposed to? And is this what I want them to be exposed to?
And then I think on our half, I think we need to think about having better representation in space.
Mm-hmm.
Representation's easy through media and stuff, and we should be educating Pride. I spoke with a power last week, and they said if there's any issues or you want your Pride to change, speak to them. Just speak to your Pride and say, I don't see me there, or I don't see our community there. Can we change that? I think we also need to have a space of Pride. I think some people will disagree, but I think we need to have a space of Pride afterwards in the picnic, so we can come and socialise and connect, get out of the busyness, get away from the families as well. Because I think sometimes we do want to have a discussion that which maybe is a bit more mature, which maybe is not great for little ears, because you know what they're like, they pick up everything. And going to this separate area, which is 18+, which is following all consent, and is separated and moved away. And we can have our discussions and have our education to a higher, more appropriate level for us in the separate area. So we've got to think about how we navigate as well. I think all at the moment, a lot of this discussion is kink should be at Pride, kink should be at Pride. And I'm like, okay, great. You discuss about kink at Pride. What do you want? Mm-hmm. And they go, oh, well, we just want to be there. And I went, okay, how? Oh, we just want to attend the march. Well, no one's saying you can't. Oh, yeah, but we haven't got great representation. So what do you want changing there? Oh, well, we just want to be there. And I was like, think about what you want. What do we want? What do we as a community want to see? Because once we know what we want to see as a community, we can go to the Pride and say, hello, we're not seeing this. We all want this.
Yep.
Let's do this as a community. Let's build this. And once Prides actually work with us and build it, they're not going to be scared. Because a lot of Prides are probably uneducated. They probably don't know. Some of the members are probably not kinky or fetish, or they're not a part of our community. They probably don't know what the community means, and all they're seeing is these negative messages. And they're like, oh shit, we shouldn't allow sex. And if we actually have discussions, we're better.
It comes down to have a conversation with people from that community at the table. That's what it comes down to.
And we should. If they're not engaging and they're not reaching out, what's to say we can't reach out? They ignore us, that's a different matter. That's where you can message me and I go, okay, give me 2 seconds, I'll go message the Board of the Power, or I'll go message InterPride, or I'll go message UK Pride. And I'll start to get in the conversation.
Yep.
But I can't see any Pride doing that. Because they want to make their area better. They want to make it more inclusive.
Yep. Yeah.
There are like a minority, 0.1% of Prides that won't. Just start that conversation, start engaging, and then we build a better community.
So we've drifted way, way off of the original topic with this. So...
It's fine.
Some of that may trim down a little bit, but let me maneuver us around at this point back to the handlers situation. And we have a few questions from the community. And I'm going to start with the cheeky one that I got sent from Craig over at Kinky Boys. Pups on furniture, yes or no?
Oh. How do I... Now, I've got to be careful what I say here. When they're in total headspace and I'm not being the kinky fucker I am, no, you can't go on the furniture. If I want to do a scene where you're being naughty and want to piss all over the furniture, yes. I know that probably doesn't answer the question, but no, you're not allowed on the sofa. But if you want to be a naughty boy, get on the sofa.
Fair enough. He also asked, how as a handler do you pick out a pup name?
Oh, God. I've named a few pups in my past. Some have gone well, some haven't gone so well. So there's a few ways I do it. One way is saying what you're passionate about, what do you like, what do you like doing, what do you like listening to, what's your favourite artist, what's your favourite music, what's your favourite anime, what's your favourite game, is there a character from that? So sometimes it's saying to them, oh, what's inspirational to you, and what do you think would be nice for you. Have you got a nickname already? Mine was taken from rugby. I know it doesn't look like I play rugby anymore. But, mine was taken from rugby because I hit people because they high tackled me and then I acted all cheap. So mine was Thumper. So that's sometimes the way that I go about it and start letting them think about what they want to do. Because at the end of the day, it's their name. Yeah. I'm not going to name them because they're going to live with it. They might get rid of me after a year because they think I'm an absolute crap. So there's no point in me naming
them. Fair enough.
However, there has been times where they've been really unsure and there's just been that name just pops up in my head. It's like from a song or from something and I've just gone, shall I tell you what? That's your name. What do you think about it? And they've gone for it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I've done that and they've told me to fuck
off.
Oh, yeah. Well, at least they got their answer.
There's no... Yeah. That's their pup name. Pup. I'm waiting for that to be a name now. Please, someone do it. But yeah, it's up to the pup. And I think it's just, as a handler, you've got to help them start that.
I remember naming my pup. My pup is also my husband, so I already know him quite well, obviously. I picked out a few things that I know he has an interest in, and I kind of generally have picked out a few names around that sort of theme. And I wrote them on pieces of paper and then got him in a headspace and I put it in front of him to see if it barks or not. And that's how we got his name.
I like that.
There's also something that I want to take from Germany at the moment, but I don't think many pups are really going for it at the moment. In Germany, they have a naming ceremony.
Oh, okay.
So once you get your name, you're given your name. So you get Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence do a naming ceremony in Germany.
Wow.
And nice. They do it actually on the Pride stage at Mandenberg, which I'm going to this year, where they name the puppies and they do a whole like fake christening, and I would just to do one in the UK.
That sounds cool.
So if there's a Sister of Perpetual Indulgence in the UK that would like to do that, find me and tell me and we'll do it. We should have done it for MRM. Missed out on the opportunity.
That sounds cool. All right, a couple of questions from Mutt Banjo, who asks, why are mutts better than pups? Kind of winky tongue out face.
There are a lot of pups that are mutts. I don't really know. Mutts are just a bit more dirty, I guess. Pups are still cute and then mutts are the dirty ones. But I know a lot of dirty pups as well, I can tell you that.
Yeah, but for a serious question, he asks, what are some good ways you show dominance to a pup? Like click your fingers, short whistles, certain attire, specific tasks for the pup, etc. Well,
yeah, so I have a nice pair of leather gloves from Regulation.
Okay.
And they really help.
Other brands are available.
Other brands are available. They do some lovely gloves everywhere. But I like wearing them because it's that feel of leather, so it sort of gets me into a headspace. I can't click, unfortunately. I have tried. but also, the other thing is that a lot of pups like leather gloves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much nice to do all sorts of like breath play and all sorts of like contact stuff with gloves.
Yeah, yeah.
I also like non-verbal commands. I have a problem speaking with anxiety and stuff like that. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I don't know what word I'm saying. And if I stumble while I'm trying to do a scene, it doesn't really seem that professional or dominant.
Mm.
So doing a really clear command is helpful for me. Also very hot. Because if you do one clear command and they just do it, you're like, I have total control over you and I don't even have to speak a bloody word and you just come here. So like tapping the thigh or doing all sorts of like finger actions, I find very attractive. And also just wearing general leather seems to just make everyone drool and get on their knees. So generally that's what I do with puppies, but I did my whole... we had to do a handler routine for European contest, handlers, part of our contest. And I actually came in a different attire to everyone else. I was in jeans and a nice shirt, and all I had was my leather gloves and my hat. And literally, I felt so... It was very enjoyable. I was doing all non-verbal commands. I had my leather gloves on. I was giving them treats. It really helped as well because it made them do stuff because they wanted a treat. And I found that was actually quite different, but also really fun just to break it away and just break away all of this kink and all of this sort of flamboyance, say, of domination and just go, I've got gloves on, got my hat on, that's my headspace, I've got some treats and I've got my commands and I've got my pup. And let's just do this, let's have fun. And it really worked. So there's all different ways of doing it and I think I'm still exploring how to have that sort of domination submission with puppies as well.
Fair enough. So I think that brings us towards the end, unless there's anything that you'd like to add.
No, I was going to look if there's any questions on my end.
Okay,
When I had a look, I didn't see any, but if you've had any, by all means.
Well, I could just ask you questions. No, let's turn it around. Will there be a transcript available, Kitty Ronnie?
We do not.
Our mother.
We do not currently have the ability to do transcripts. And if somebody knows of a service out there that we can do a transcript with, then we would be happy to look into it. But at this moment, it's not a thing that we have. Although it is something that I am aware of. And it, quite honestly, it comes down to the fact that we do this for free and we don't have the money to employ someone to do it or a service to do it.
So, Kitty, that's your answer. Mother, message them. You probably know someone.
If you do, please do. Like, we absolutely would like to know.
We would love to do it if we have the ability to.
We call her Mother. She's the one who runs... she's the president of the European Puppy and Hand Contest. So we call her Mother.
call her
She
mother.
Literally... Mother. She literally acts like her mother and tells us off when we all start hitting each other, which happens often. Oh, this would be a thing to ask for you and for people. Is if you imagined a handler, what would you see a handler to be?
So for me, it's very much... And this is kind of based off my own experiences sort of with puppies as well. It's very similar to what you said, the caring role and the sort of the a little bit of the dominance role in there, because that's kind of where I approach kink from in terms of my like where I enter the scene sort of thing. It never comes down to attire or anything, it comes down to your relationship with the pup. And to me, I don't think there's necessarily a standard as such.
Yeah, for me, it'll be like both the person holding the leash of the pup, or whatever pet, and also, you know, the person who gives them treats and play with them, pet their heads and that kind of thing. You know, there's both the dominant side and the playful side for me.
I'm just going to question. I've got the mic now. So do you think that as a community we need to open our eyes about what a handler is in terms of pet play as well? Because at the moment,
yeah, possibly.
Obviously, as the handler is joined with the pup, do we need to think about blowing up the handler thing and going, actually, it's not just pup, there's pets as well. Or do you think there's space for that?
I think it's not just opening the handler thing. I think it's, you touched on it there, like, it's opening up that pet play is more than just puppies. Because you say pet play to someone, in the first place that someone's mind goes is puppies. Like, we know of a couple of cats, we know... I always immediately think of Mr. Christopher over at What's the Safe Word, who's into pony play. Is a, I believe they're a draft horse. I may have got that wrong. I apologise if so. But sort of when you say pet play, the mind immediately goes to puppies because that's the one that everyone knows. I think you need to expand that out, and with that comes expanding out the handler.
And do you think a handler can train a pony? Or do you think that that's where we need to make Handler Plus, or we need to rethink about the title name to encompass trainers and handlers of other pets?
For me personally, I wouldn't necessarily want to weigh in. Only because it's not my area of the kink scene, and then I don't want to be in this position that I'm telling other kinksters how to do their kink.
I mean, yeah, it's what you want to call yourself, you know. Do you style yourself, you know, within reason, obviously, like whatever you want. If you want to style yourself as something that, in another word that is not handler, then, you know, if that's what you do, that's completely fine. It's like any other couple, kind of dumps or couple relationships, you know, that both parties can do very, very similar things, yet have different titles to refer to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's completely fine.
Yeah. So,
it's just something that I'm engaging mm-hmm. with.
No, I appreciate the question. It's kind of nice to like have a guest turn that round on us, actually.
I love doing it.
But if, with that said, I think we have touched on most things at that point. So if people want to find you elsewhere, like they want to like reach out to you, etc., where can they find you?
So I've got nearly every social media possible.
Okay.
apart from TikTok, yet. So Facebook, it's Quincy Young. On Twitter, it's Quincy Young XXX. On Instagram, it's the Quincy Young, because we can't use XXXs on Instagram. So there where you can find me at the moment. There is also some stuff going. You can also find me on my website. Mm-hmm. Ooh, ehquincy.online. Also, I am setting up a Handler Plus Facebook group where you can ask maybe some more pertinent questions, and also if you ask them on there, other people may mm-hmm. have them. So keep an eye out on my social media. It might be already released by the time this mm-hmm. comes out. If not, just search for Handler Plus and you might find the Facebook group chat. And you can also Telegram me. PupThumper1. I still haven't been asked to change my app. It's still my pup name, and I don't think it will do. So there's all different ways of contacting me. Also, if you are more interested in the title, it's EuroPHC on Twitter, and European Pup and Handler Contest on Facebook, and Instagram, I think it's EuroPHC. So have a follow of those as well, because you'll probably see more of what the European puppy is doing as well, Thali. And you'll also get to know when the contest is coming up for next year. So if you want to compete, or contest, I should say, have a go. There's nothing to lose. And you get to have fun at Dartford.
Perfect.
Swing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, good to see you.
So, Chris, shall we go into the 5-minute Marvel?
Yeah, let's do the 5-minute Marvel.
Okay. Okay, so we're talking about Ms. Marvel, right?
Yes, I think so.
Oh my god, that show has already got me hooked.
I know, right? Like, this show, I don't know, some people have got mixed feelings about it just because it's kind of not as grand as some other series may be. For example, Loki, that's kind of very, very grand in scale. But this is more personal, which I do like. I really
like. But you know what? I think it has to be. And I think the thing is, like, I like the on-the-ground stories.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the reasons I loved Hawkeye so much, because mm-hmm. you kind of like, okay, we acknowledge all this happened, but take a step back to the life and day-to-day.
Exactly.
And honestly, like, even if it wasn't that, just the visual style of this show, I really pray they keep it as strong as it is.
Yeah.
Because, oh my god, that is amazing.
Yeah. And there are so many Easter eggs all over the mm-hmm. place as well. I love it. Like, who doesn't want to listen to a Scott Lang podcast?
Right? Oh my god, yes. Absolutely. Like, I actually made notes as I was watching it the moment I saw that, and I'm just like, oh my god, yes, please.
Yeah. It's like, it's a total parody of The American Life, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the powered life. You're like, I love it. It's cool.
Oh, but I really loved seeing, like, so much, like, so one thing that was worrying when they announced Ms. Marvel was, like, how far are you going to go with pulling in a cultural set of references on this?
Sure.
Because this is a character that does come from a very strong Muslim American background. Mm-hmm. And I'm really happy to see that they're pulling in the way that they are.
Yeah,
and that they seem to be doing it really well, and it's something that I think Marvel has been doing much, much better, especially recently.
Yeah, they have not done badly with a lot of characters from, you know, diverse cultural backgrounds. To be fair, mm-hmm. like Shang-Chi, they've done him and his sister quite well, and it's not overly. They don't avoid the topic as much as they used to. No,
that's one thing that I'm really liking about this.
Yeah.
And I think it's hopefully a good step for improving diversity on screen in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of diversity, I need that Asgard Pride t-shirt.
Yeah. That or something very similar to it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Although, you know what one of my favourite moments of this was? Mm. And it's going to sound so bad. I really liked I don't know, was it like a careers teacher or whatever it is?
Oh, right.
Like
yeah.
Gabe?
Yeah.
And it's just like, there was that, literally in my notes here, I have written down, we all know a Gabe. And if you don't, it's you. We all have that one friend. Mm.
Yeah.
So are you quoting Mulan at me? It's just like, yes, yes, I am.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
I'm really hoping that we see more of that visual style come through. I really hope that we see more cultural side of this come through as well.
Yeah.
It's giving me, like, really kind of, what was the name of the, like, it's kind of given me kind of Ferris Bueller meets Kick-Ass in some ways.
Okay.
Like, when you start, like, looking at the way that they're shooting certain scenes and like, effects, etc.
Mm.
And I'm really here for this. I'm really loving it. and honestly, like, I just find I apologize if I mispronounced it.
Yeah.
I'm really finding her really engaging to watch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because she's basically one of us
mm-hmm.
in terms of personality, because she is a superhero fan, just like us. And
exactly.
From where we're watching, like, oh, yeah, I can totally relate to Kamala, but also, you know.
Yep.
And I love, you know, they have she has a normal family, like many mm-hmm. superheroes don't. We don't ever see their family at all, or, you know, their families are also powered, etc. She just has a normal family. That's amazing.
There was a little part of me that wanted to see her go in the whole costume, though.
Excelsior!
I know we're over time, but that would have been great. That would have been funny as hell. But anyway, that was the 5-minute Marvel.
Yeah.
Chris, I don't know if you noticed, but like, there's no E3 this year, but we kind of had everyone like release all the details over the weekend anyway.
Yeah, it's the not E3 that we seem to have these days. The not E3.
I don't know. June's always a weird one for us because it's just like, it's Pride Month and it's usually E3, although it's been weird this year. So, Gamers Christmas plus...
Gay Christmas?
Yeah. Equals...
Equal Gamers Christmas.
Anyway, so Gamers Christmas, had...
that's it. That's what it is.
Exactly. So, like, at this point of recording, we've had the Microsoft Showcase.
Yep.
There's been the Summer Games Fest, but I've not seen that yet. I don't know if you have.
There's been a few other things. I know PlayStation has had a State of Play. I know, there's been a Call of Duty thing. There's been, Summer Game Fest, as you said.
Mm-hmm. But the PlayStation one was mostly Final Fantasy, wasn't it?
It was Final Fantasy, yeah.
Because that seems to be all I'm hearing from it.
There's something called the Callisto Protocol, which is something... Well, it's basically like Dead Space.
Okay. I don't know. Sony just did not give me anything to want to watch them this year.
Well, there's one thing that I actually want from Sony, because they are putting Spider-Man onto PC.
Yes, I did hear that. And I'm kind of hopeful I'll be able to run it one fine day, but not with the cost of graphics cards at what they are.
That is also true. Yeah, you kind of wish cloud gaming for that is a thing.
Yeah, that is one of the times that I would actually do that, because I'm usually not the biggest fan of cloud gaming. Like, it's useful when you're traveling, but when you're at home, not so much. The latency is just irritating to me when I'm at home.
Sometimes I do it because I don't necessarily want to install a game on my Xbox, you know, because there's limited space on the Xbox.
That's fair. And then the other one that I've seen is the Capcom Showcase.
Mm.
So, I don't know, like, we've definitely both seen the Microsoft one. Like, is there anything that stood out to you?
Nothing that much. I am surprised by the Forza Horizon 5 add-on, the first DLC. It's already Hot Wheels.
I mean, here's the thing. I kind of saw that coming, and I'm almost surprised that we didn't get it for 4 either, to be honest.
Well, we got the Lego one for 4.
True, very true. But I don't know. Hot Wheels and Forza Horizon is one of those combinations that to me just works.
Oh, it works. It totally works. But Forza Horizon had been doing this thing of, you know, the first DLC is the serious one, and then the second DLC is the stupid tie-in with another toy company. That it's been that sort of pattern. So I am surprised that they have announced Hot Wheels as the first one.
True. No, I can understand that. Although it seems very much that, judging by what they showed off of Forza
Motorsport,
It strikes me very much they're going full sim with that now.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And I think I have no objection to them taking Motorsport full sim and making Horizon very much kind of your arcade racer.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it already was, but that just, it, to me, this kind of, let's just release a fun DLC as our first one and carry on that trend, just leans into that more for me, and I'm A-okay with that.
Well, that's true, yeah. I mean, it makes sense for Forza Motorsport to be going that way, totally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no problem with that. What about for you? What's for you on the Xbox Showcase?
Honestly, I'll tell you what stood out to me about the Xbox Showcase.
Mm-hmm.
is the fact that I walked away from it not really giving a shit about any of it. Okay. Like, the biggest thing that I was talking about afterwards was the captaincy update for Sea of Thieves. Because finally being able to actually do the captaincy line, which is something, like, most people are going to look at that and go, well, that doesn't seem like that much of an addition, and why was this stuff not in at the start? It's just like, this has been something that has been, like, teased to us for 4 years at this point. Okay. And there's some interesting subtleties in that particular trailer that got me kind of excited for what will come. But what struck me a lot about the Xbox One is, like, they tried to do too much, in my opinion. Like, what I would have preferred them to have done is have about half of the number of games that they showed off.
Right, okay.
And give us a proper look at the games. Fair rather enough. Than this, like, really high-paced jump cut trailers that I can't really tell anything about the games that you're showing off.
No, that's true, yeah.
Like, the actual winner of E3, as it were, for me this year is Capcom. Which is kind of interesting to me because I really don't tend to care about Capcom.
Don't have I ever cared about Capcom.
Well, no, so I'll tell you why. Because Capcom did a really good job of kind of understanding the assignment. And they went in and it's just like, okay, here is 4 or 5 of our franchises, yep. Each with the breathing room to tell us enough about what we're doing with them. And we're going to give a longer section to one of them at the end, which in this case was Resident Evil. But you got a proper look at what they were showing off. And even for the games that I have no interest in, like the Resident Evil, for example, like it was cool to see, oh, you're doing quite an interesting thing with this particular franchise. It's not for me, but I'm happy that this is happening.
Okay.
One thing that really stood out for me from them, though, is Exo Primal, which I have never heard of this game until now.
No.
And I'm like reading this description from IGN. It's described as a upcoming co-op dinosaur murder action game, and it just looks like stupid fun. It's one of those games that kind of takes me back to, I guess, kind of 360 gaming, where it's just like, here is a stupid concept. We're going to run with it. Like, here, have a mech suit and basically an Iron Man Gundam hybrid, and go and fight hordes of dinosaurs.
Yeah, okay, the premise makes no sense, but...
But that's where you get the gold. Some of the best games have come from.
Oh yeah, I agree. Like, Plants vs. Zombies, like, you think of it.
Exactly.
What on earth are you on about?
Exactly. I don't think we can, like, we've acknowledged the Xbox event, do we want to talk about Starfield?
We can talk about Starfield.
What was your opinion on it? Do you have an opinion on it?
I
wasn't impressed.
I don't know about Starfield. It's I don't know what I want from Starfield. That's my thing. I don't know.
Here's my thing. For a game that has been in development as long as it has.
Sure.
Teased as much as it has.
Yep.
It's just ugly. I'm sorry, it's ugly.
Right, okay.
It does not look like a current gen game. The space combat in that game is the only thing that actually had any interest in me. All the environments look like basically Fallout 4 in space. The facial animation is typical Bethesda craft because...
It's Bethesda. I do expect them to look pretty bad because honestly, all of Bethesda games have looked pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. The gunplay feels rough, and I'm not even controlling it. It just felt horrible. Like, even just looking at it, I'm going, that's going to be ass. And it's just it's Bethesda does No Man's Sky, but in the Fallout engine. That's how it sold to me.
Yeah.
The opening shot of one of the videos they show is a spacecraft landing on a planet.
Uh-huh, okay.
But the particle effects and the smoke and everything that it's meant to be kicking up off the engine are so clearly just 2D sprites.
Right, okay.
And it just looks so bad. And there seems to be two camps. Everyone's either really thrilled for it or everyone's going, this is No Man's Sky in Fallout and it doesn't even look good. And I'm very much in that last camp.
Mm. I mean, when the comments comes out, I'll, you know, give that a go for sure. But yeah, I don't really think much of. I don't really think much of Bethesda games, to be honest.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, I enjoyed Fallout. Fallout 76 was a train wreck, but it eventually got okay. Given what I've heard about the production that's been out in the public eye recently, I'm not surprised that that was a train wreck, given how they were pushing with the crunch, etc.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess I'm just disappointed. For all the hype around that game, I'm just disappointed. Like, I don't know. Was there something else that caught your eye?
Sure. There are a few titles that caught my eye. I'm not sure in a good way or a bad way.
Fair enough.
One announcement that did surprise me was Marvel's Midnight Suns.
Okay. I've known about that game for a little while.
Okay. Wasn't expecting it. But, you know, also a different take on the Marvel game, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't just your action-y game anymore.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued to see how that goes. Mm-hmm. And that's due out soon as well, if I remember rightly.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm sure it's due out in the next month or two.
Oh, October. Okay. Yeah, that's not far away.
Okay, maybe not the next month or two, but close enough.
Definitely this year, yeah. I also seen a rather cute game called Lumberjack.
Wait, I didn't see this one. I'm intrigued by the name alone, though.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those cute games. It's a lumberjack who's called Jack, which is also a bear. Like, you know, okay. a bio bear rather than, you know, a hairy. I said a cute game. You know, bears can be very cute as well. Don't get me wrong.
So what's the... Obviously, the premise is you're a lumberjack bear, but, like, what's the, like, gameplay loop? What's it? Because this is... I have not seen or heard
of this game. Yeah, yeah, okay. It's a little bit of a puzzler kind of game. So you're a bear with an axe, and you have to smash up a few things in the level to kind of progress, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And I think there is a bit of... like, save the environments kind of theme. Oh, well.
Right. Okay. Interesting. I'll tell you one that... And this is, like... I'm going to give you total whiplash about as bad as some of the Microsoft transitions were. I'll tell you what did catch my eye.
Right.
Was right. Scorn.
Scorn.
Which was the H.R. Geiger-looking video game that Microsoft was showing off. And it's, like... I don't know why this is grabbing my eye. I think it is just purely that kind of H.R. Geiger visual.
Okay.
But I'm really intrigued. It looks visceral as all hell. I'd probably hate it because it's horror or whatever once it comes out because I don't do horror games.
Yeah.
But something about that visual style just really kind of grabbed me. Fair gave enough. Me tonal whiplash. A lot of the Microsoft presentations went from, ooh, happy clappy, like, fun game, to here is a skull that we've just ripped the skin off. Like, okay, Microsoft.
Yeah, fair enough.
Clearly someone in marketing was having a bad day. But I don't know, like, just the visuals of that game.
Mm.
It's like a Geiger drawing come to life, and I'm just fascinated.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. It seems also that the Battle Royale genre still hasn't died.
No, it hasn't. Yeah.
A few new ones of them coming out of various different themes.
I think we're in that point where it's just like, the Battle Royale thing has been done to death. Companies have still got the money invested there, though, because they started while it was at its hype trying to chase it.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll see whether that comes down on or not.
Is that the end of... Is it a beginning of the end of it? Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any... Like, if you had to highlight one more, is there one more that you would want to do?
The Warhammer 40,000 Dark Tides. That intrigues me.
Okay. I have heard of that game. I don't think I've seen it.
Hmm.
But it's Warhammer, and that always has potential if it's handled well. Because that universe is so rich.
Exactly.
The only other one that really grabbed me, I guess. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Grabbed me is maybe not the right word. Intrigued me is probably the better word, is the new Diablo. And right. Their movement to turn Diablo into kind of a open world thing, it makes me worried about the whole games as a service thing creeping in.
Oh, God,
especially
yeah.
given that, you know, let's say Diablo's swung and missed a lot recently. Especially their mobile game, etc., and the way that they've been with staff and everything else at Blizzard, like,
yep.
you know.
Yep.
It's, I'm still not, don't get me wrong, like, I know I'm talking about them now, but still not happy with Blizzard for all the reasons that we've said before. I'm not going to repeat myself, but I am intrigued at least just to see what that means for a series that has traditionally been either couch co-op or, like, very much limited multiplayer, to see how that step out happens. Just from a mechanical point of view, you know?
Yeah, fair enough. I don't know. But yeah, okay, that's fair. Diablo is... Yeah. Okay.
I know, it's a Blizzard game. I all the problems with Blizzard are still the problems with Blizzard.
Yep. Yep.
It's just purely like, I'm intrigued just from the mechanical point of view.
Okay.
But yeah, that's, I guess, a brief look at our thoughts on not E3.
Not E3, exactly.
But yeah, it's a weird one. Like, I don't think it was worth us doing a separate show on it this year. Like,
no,
with them
not.
Kind of yeah. cancelling the schedule, etc. But there's been one or two, but I just figured most things we'll cover as they come up if they really grabbed our attention.
Mm. Yeah.
But for now, I guess that is the end.
Cool.
So if people want to find us, Chris, where can they find us?
So you can find us on social media as TBNJ Podcasts. Our links page, which is new, is lnk.at/TBNJ Podcast. And you can also leave us a voice message at the usual place, anchor.fm/TBNJ Podcast.
Indeed. Thank you very much for Quincy for joining us.
Oh,
it
yes.
was really delightful talking with them.
Mm-hmm.
And again, congratulations on them contesting successfully for the title.
Yeah, and you know, have a good year being, you know, the title holder and traveling the world.
Indeed. We have been Teabags and Joysticks. I have been Si.
I've been Chris.
Thank you for listening and bye.
Bye.
This episode of the Teabags and Joysticks podcast was edited by TBNJ Psy. The title music is Quarter Conundrum by DOAK, and a big thank you for Quincy, Handler EU, joining us on this show. Hope we see you next time. Bye!